Welcome to Speaking Out for the Blind here on ACB Radio, where your listening is our business. I'm Brian McKellen. This show airs every Wednesday night at 10:30 p.m. Eastern, 7:30 p.m. Pacific. Before we get into today's show, here's some exciting news for all ACB Radio listeners. You now can listen to this and other ACB Radio programs anytime on a telephone. Just dial 231-460-1047 and follow the instructions to listen to any ACB Radio station. It's easy, and most of all, allows you to listen to our shows from anywhere there is a phone connection. Now back to today's Speaking Out for the Blind show. According to the Sacramento Bee, today's guest is a celebrated winemaker. Even though he sees only darkness, today's guest can pour a Cabernet Franc into an empty glass without spilling a drop. He can even add Cabernet Sauvignon to that glass and create a powerful blend. The creator of that powerful blend is David Hunt. He's the owner of Hunt Cellars in Paso Robles, California. And he joins us to talk about that secret blend and how he became a successful winemaker. Hello, David.
How are you doing there, Brian?
Good. How are you doing?
Very good. Thank you.
So before we get into that secret wine blend of yours, we got to first talk about your life. The LA Weekly and Sacramento Bee say that you were born with retinitis pigmentosa. But the disease didn't stop you from playing tennis and driving a car well in your 20s in rural North Carolina. In what ways did you have to speak out about the ability to play tennis and be accepted in this competitive sport and drive a car with a license despite your low vision?
Oh, well, I played tennis up until 1989, 1990. I had a little bit of vision. I had with retinitis pigmentosa, you have what they call island vision, where you, unless you have your head angled the right direction, you may or may not see something. And I drove a car until I was in my 30s, so I didn't have that freedom. But then it got dangerous. So you weren't sure what you could see and could not see, so I gave it up.
So did you win any championships, any special?
No, it's just a hobby. No. I love sports, and I played all the sports when I was growing up. And I was actually, I'll never forget, in high school, I was pretty good at basketball. And my senior year, I couldn't see the bounce passes from the retinitis pigmentosa, so I had to give it up.
So you had to give up making that $100,000 shot, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, I was actually been requested to play in junior college basketball on a tuition scholarship, but couldn't do it because of the blindness.
Well, believe it or not, your dad also had retinitis pigmentosa, but he worked in the lumber industry. He gave you one quote: "Use your brain, not your brow." Tell me about this quote and how you followed that quote and in what ways you had to speak out about your ability to become the successful winemaker that you are today.
Well, use your brain, not your brow, not your back. We worked hard. I worked hard from the time I was 6 years old with him, and I just learned that it's better to be smart and use your brain instead of your back, and get paid for what you know and what you can do versus just a job. So that's what that was meant to be.
Huh. Well, we're talking about working hard. You mentioned that the secret of your success isn't having that ability to recognize an opportunity, but instead it's having the audacity to see it. In your work of being successful, did you ever think that because you couldn't see the wine, that you couldn't be successful?
No. The ability to recognize an opportunity is important, but what you have to do is seize that opportunity. To manifest it, to do something with it. I don't believe in the word can't, won't work, and impossible. I think there's just negative words, and if you put negative words out there, negative things come back. I believe that, I knew I had a good palate. I knew that that mixology and mixing things together was a powerful way to add expression to the wine. And I thought it was a benefit on the side of heightened senses, whatever you want to say. I practiced mnemonics from the time I was a kid, for whatever reason, studying memory. And I can go into the winery and memorize the flavors of probably dozens of barrels and go back and give me that first barrel over there I tasted, and that's the flavor I'm looking for. It's just turning your senses on and utilize them, not being lazy.
Let's continue on your road of life. You turn 21. You had just $35 in your pocket. You drove to L.A. as a musician to try and land a record deal, but instead, you met this girl, hung out with her, got married, and you worked in the home security business. We're going to get more into the music later. But first, I want to talk about this home security business of yours. Just tell me more about that business.
Well, let's correct a couple of facts there.
Sure.
I came to California. I was invited to be on the Dating Game.
Oh, really?
Yes, I was a musician back east. And I did the Dating Game, and I started getting involved with the music scene in Los Angeles. And then I bought a security system, an alarm system to protect my musical equipment. And because that's when Woodstock happened, back in that generation, right after Woodstock, a few years after that, when crime became prevalent in home invasion, home security. And so then I read an article in the Wall Street Journal that said the next $4 to $5 billion industry would be home security. Prior to that, security systems were mostly utilized in banks and jewelry stores, et cetera. So that led to other folks saying, hey, I'm a little nervous too, can you get me one? So, seizing the opportunity, I started a home security system. And as far as meeting my wife, prior to that happening, I was an admissions director of an all-girls college. And so I had interviewed her for the college. And we liked each other, and that's how that happened. But I was not 21. I was 20, maybe 24 when I met her. Yeah.
Let's talk about your home security business. You invented a few brand new alarm devices. You secured the patents, and you made some money. What alarm devices did you invent, and how did you speak up and get the buyers to buy the product?
Well, it's just the most vulnerable part of any security system is the telephone line being cut. If you monitor by a central station, I'm going back a lot of years. I got to think about all this stuff. I did this almost 30 years ago, so I invented a product that was using a technology we cut a patent called DCB, Digital Carrier Bus, where if your phone line was cut, he would grab another phone line and call the central station. Then I helped to invent a day alert system where you can have your alarm off, but if someone opens the door, you get a buzz. And I actually invented the zone panel, but I didn't get these things patented, unfortunately. I just couldn't do it and regret that. For it to tell you which window door was open, I did that in the, 70s.
Mm.
A lot of things, what you have to do is see where the void is and fill it.
Let's now talk about how you got into winemaking. You noticed the mystique of wine when you were just a poor 22-year-old man. You pulled over at this old general store in the town of Hana, Hawaii, one night. That general store owner, he invited you to dinner. Him and other fellow guests, they oohed and they ahed over this specific bottle of French wine. What was that wine?
Don't know. I just stood there and just was mesmerized and with the mystique of how the intelligent people could talk about a bottle of wine for 2 or 3 hours.
I see.
And so that was kind of captivating. I had never drank very much. I didn't even drink beer. I was from a very religious family. So, but that kind of planted a seed in my mind, and how I got in the wine business, that was kind of always was in the back of my mind, that scenario, that scene. And I thought it'd be a good way for my wife and I to retire in a beautiful bucolic setting. We'd looked around, and the scenery and the ambiance of wine and grapes growing is very, it's impeccable, it's beautiful. I had my sight back then, I could see a little bit. And so we thought it'd be a good way to retire in our older age, sitting on the front porch, sipping some Cabernet and watching the vines grow. But that's not exactly the way it works. It is a lot of work and a lot of research and constantly things that happen 24 hours a day. The vines never sleep.
You finally narrow the decision, though, to San Luis Obispo County on California's central coast.
Yes, that's our case room is on the way to Torres Castle, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I've been there.
Yeah. Why did we pick that? Because I just felt there had been a little more creative than a lot of the Napa wines were being. They had a little more freedom of expression as far as the winemaking art itself. And real estate prices weren't so insanely high. And I found the right piece of property. So this is it. It's based on pretty much the soil. The soil and the vineyard is so important. People just don't know how important a world-class vineyard is. Because even in a bad vintage of wine, the best vineyards, the brand vineyards, have the best quality fruit. And it is the fruit that makes the grapes. It's not, you can't make good wine out of mediocre fruit. You can get mediocre wine. You got to have high-quality fruit with great varietal flavor and great intensity. So the good Lord blessed me and let me pick this vineyard. It was a dry barley farm, no commercial water, no agricultural water. So I was willing to roll the dice and do test wells up to $50,000 worth, if that's what it meant. Because finding water when the right soil was like finding gold or oil. So I hired a hydrologist. We did a 10-mile cross-section of all the water wells and oil wells in the area, and he came out with a stick, said, drill here. You'll probably get 500-600 gallons. I got a couple hundred gallons, but that was enough to get me started.
You chose to name your vineyard Destiny Vineyard. Why? Because you had a new baby girl named Destiny, who was born in 1996.
Exactly. She wasn't born at the time when I found the vineyard. My wife had was bedridden because she had gestational diabetes.
Mm.
And so she didn't get to see the vineyard. I could see the soil back then in 96 a little bit, and I had a little bit of a sight. Couldn't drive, but I said, this is it. So I bought it, and she approved later on, and we named it Destiny. Was born in September of 96, so we named it Destiny Vineyards.
Now, here's the moment we've all been waiting for. You've got to tell us about your special wine blend. Let me first describe it a bit. This is what I found from the articles on the web, the two articles I mentioned in the Sacramento Bee, especially. You first ask your winemaking assistant to give you three glasses. One of the glasses has Cabernet Sauvignon. Another glass contains Cabernet Franc. And the final glass has absolutely no wine in it. Why is this glass empty? Why is this empty glass used to mix the other two?
Correct. Well, because it's a certain percentage. So I can hear the tonality of wine in a glass, being a musician and just by practice. So wine does have timbre, wine does have pitch, wine does have density. So I said I'm going to pour about 55% or more of this Cab Franc in the glass first, and then I'm going to pour about 45% or 40% of the Cabernet in the glass. And that's what I did, and that's called that wine is called Encore.
Let's continue talking about this winemaking. You have no idea exactly as to how much wine fills up the first two glasses. Purple colored in the two glasses is a mystery to you. With the bright fluorescent lighting in your winer's lab, you only see darkness. But with pouring and spilling just a few ounces of Cabernet Franc, and we're talking about spilling, into the empty glass, you place one of your fingers. This is the senses we're talking about, the feel. One of your fingers precisely at the fill level of the glass. Explain this process a little bit more to me.
Well, it's just kind of a gift I have. I can tell by, I take an empty glass and know the weight in your mind and put wine in it and you know where it should be on the glass, and I then swirl the glass, I listen to where it is.
You mentioned that you listen for where the sound in the glass is, specifically the pitch change, whether it goes high or whether it goes low. Wine's got both weight and volume. The more dense the wine is, the different the sounds you're going to pick up. Deep, 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 deep. Tell us more about what and how you determined a way to use this information, rather than sight.
How do I determine how to use information? It's just kind of it's an innate thing that I have, that I can just listen to water, or liquid hit the wine, hit the glass, and how the timbre of the glass changes, and kind of know where it is in the glass. You can practice it with water if you want to, but I don't know. It's just something I know. I don't know how I know. I just know.
Let's talk about meshing in wine with music now. Now we get to your music.
Okay.
The Sacramento Bee article says, as a multi-instrumentalist, you released a special CD during the fall of 2012 called Rhapsody in Red. It contains a book of songs referencing specific wines from Hunt's Cellars. What are the names of these specific wines, and what songs are they associated with? Any popular ones?
I don't think it's, I don't know, it hasn't been a hit on the radio yet, but I'd love for it to be. But the first track is called Hilltop Serenade. Hilltop Serenade is also a Reserve Syrah we make. But Hilltop Serenade is about the angels sharing the wine business. The folklore says that when winery is being produced, that the angels hover around the winery and they suck up the evaporation. So that's kind of what, we have a lot of angels in our vineyard, so that's what I call the angel share. It's a beautiful song. We have some very, very super great superstar musicians on the album. Singing background on that one is Clydene Jackson. She did all the background vocals for Avatar and Lion King. She and I do all the vocals, and I wrote all the music. And then I wrote a song.
Wait, you're talking about James Cameron's Avatar, correct?
Right. Uh-huh.
Okay, keep going.
Then the album, there's a song called Destiny. It's a song I wrote the night before Destiny was born, thinking she'd be born a couple of weeks down the road. So I go upstairs and I play that for my wife. I said, I just wrote this song. It's about a father's perspective of will her hair be woven in gold, and her eyes be blue as the southern skies, or will her eyes be brown? And so her hair was woven with gold, and her blue eyes, and wasn't brown. So it's about the consternation of being a father, anticipation. And we'd gone out to dinner that night, and her brothers had said, "Oh, Dad, our lives are going to be turned upside down. It's a girl." And so I put that in the song. And a little bit about my wife had diabetes. She pricks her hand is one of the first lines, and blocks out her mind, doesn't feel the pain. So it's a cool song. And then I have a wine called Oldie But Goodie, which is a port. It's a comparison, an analogy of life to wine. We get better with age, just like fine wine. That's what the song's about. Just because we're old doesn't mean we're not great and doesn't know what we're doing. And then I have another wine called Bon Vivant, which means to the good life. It's a very upbeat, positive song. And we have a Cabernet called Bon Vivant. I have a Merlot called Unforgettable. So there's a song, Unforgettable. It's not the Nat King Cole song. This song is about the unforgettable parts of our life, meeting our wife, getting married, and having children. And then I have another one called Cloud Nine. If you drink a great Cabernet, it puts you on Cloud Nine. You're in the moment. So it's about comparing romance and wine together. And then the last track is my my Rhapsody, Rhapsody in Red, which is a very complex orchestral song with different moods and different movements. And we have the wine called Rhapsody in Red, which is our Miritage blend.
Hunt Sellers, though, has become one of California's most highly acclaimed wineries, winning numerous prestigious awards, including Best of Class, Platinum, and Multi-Gold Medals. Give us an example when you had to speak up for yourself in obtaining these special medals.
Well, actually, it goes way beyond that. Those are what you do in that when you get those medals. We got 7 golds and 1 at the Florida International Wine Competition, just 7 in a row. We've got numerous gold medals, but I'm most proud in the past couple of years, we've had more than close to 60 wines getting 93 to 96 points. That's 100 being a perfect wine, so we're pretty close to as good as it gets. Again, we have a great vineyard, and as a winemaker, I try not to mess it up. I try to make all the wine in the vineyard, and then just it's incumbent on me not to be crazy and to let the wine make itself. If all the phenolics and all the chemical aspects of the wine were good, and so I try not to quote unquote screw it up. But we're very proud. We just in the last competition, which we got notified in February, they have a Food and Beverage Magazines has the what they call the best of 2000 California 2013 wines. They pick 100 wineries from Napa, Sonoma, Central Coast, Paso Robles to submit wines, and they have 11 categories. And you can only compete in 4. I won 4 out of 11 categories. Hunt Sellers won 4. We won the best Cabernet, and these are some serious wineries like from Alpha Omega and Napa and other Mount Veeder, great wineries. We won the best Zinfandel, we won the best Port, and the best white wine. I'll take it.
So we talked a little bit about how you speak out and educate others about the wines a little bit. But what advice do you offer these people if they want to make their own wine at home or they just want to get into the winemaking business? How should they do it?
Oh, man. I would really recommend you do a lot of research because it is a lot of work and a lot of money. It's a beautiful, bucolic sport. If you're going to go into it as a business, just know that it takes a lot of money. How would I recommend them do it? Just develop your palate to where you can know which the varietal is. Find established benchmarks. Like, for example, if Hunt Sellers was the best Cabernet that you liked, then find other Cabernets that are comparable and put that into your wine memory bank. Try everything. Wine is fun, but if you find a good venue that's consistent, that's your best investment. Going out there and just going to Trader Joe's and trying everything on the market, you're going to waste a lot of money to find something good. Then when you go back to get it, it's not there. But find good vineyards and good wineries that have a lot of good quality and stick with them. That way you have consistency, but also spread out.
How can people come to Hunt Sellers? How can they even buy your premium varietal wine?
They can call our tasting room at 805-237-1600 or visit us on the web at huntsellers.com. Love to have them involved. We sell our wines in almost every state across the country, every state that's legal.
David, we wish you the best of success in the wine industry. You're truly an inspiration to us all and encourage us to speak out and work towards our winemaking dreams. Thanks so much for joining us on the show today.
My pleasure.
Before we go, let me give listeners a quick reminder. I welcome comments and suggestions on today's episode or past and future shows. Just visit and like me on Facebook at Speaking Out for the Blind or follow me on Twitter at Speak Out Blind. That's all for this edition of Speaking Out for the Blind. Thanks for listening. And remember to speak out.